So the great thing was when I moved back to the States, it was really early 60s. And so in England, rock and roll was still very big. So I actually got to hear all people like Gene Vincent and Buddy Holly and Elvis and everybody on the radio when I was a kid. Not only in America, but when I went back to England. So my basic sort of musical education was basic rock and roll. I like the Velvet Underground and Jim Morrison and Iggy Pop and the New York Dolls and always that's a lot of what punk rock in England was based on, was that whole New York scene.
It sure was.
So yeah, I loved all that sort of stuff. In fact, Steve Stevens always says it's really funny. I was listening to tons of American music, and there he was in America listening to loads of English music. It's crazy.
On AllMusic.com, biographer William Rollman makes the point that, and I quote, Billy Idol represents the bridge between punk rock and hard rock and metal, a logical and enough evolution that somehow seemed unlikely until he made the transition, end quote. Certainly, Billy Idol's success tracks exactly the entire length of the 80s decade. Born William Broad in 1955 in England, he got the music bug when he left Sussex University as part of the famous Sex Pistols fan base called the Bromley Contingent. Billy even started his own band, Generation X, and actually had some minor success in England until the band split in 1981. His next move seemed bold. With no prospects and virtually no money, Billy Broad moved to New York City. Turns out Billy Broad had some American roots long before he morphed into Billy Idol.
I was born in London. I lived there most of my life. But I also lived in the States in Long Island in the late 50s when I was very, very young. So I actually went back to England with an American accent, can you believe it? Yeah, I thought I was American. So I had quite a sort of early sort of experience of this country, you know, when it was all Walt Disney and fins and bright colors. And
fins on cars, right?
So that's what I always remember it as. Well, my dad was looking for the American dream, but I don't think he found it.
Really? he just pulled up stakes and headed to America.
Yeah, basically, I think my dad had got ripped off enough in England, and he thought he'd try it in the States, and I think they probably ripped him off just as much.
Oh, that's a shame. How many brothers and sisters and stuff like that?
Yeah, I've got a sister.
Is she over there or over here?
Yeah, she's over there, definitely.
She's over there.
And the mirror's reflection, I'm a dancing with myself. And when there's no one else inside, in the crowded lonely night, well, I wait so long for my love vibration, and I'm dancing with myself. Dancing with myself. When there's nothing to lose and there's nothing to prove, well, I'm dancing with myself. Every type of girl, but your empty eyes seem to pass me by. Leave me dancing on with myself. So let's sink another drink, 'cause it'll give me time to think. If I had a chance, I'd ask a woman to dance, and I'd be dancing on with myself. Oh, dancing on with myself. Oh, dancing on with myself. Oh, when there's nothing to lose, so there's nothing to prove. Another drink. cause it'll give me time to think. If I had the chance, I'd ask a woman to dance, and I'll be dancing with myself. I'll dancing with myself. I'll dancing with myself. If I had the chance, I'd ask a woman to dance. If I had the chance, I'd ask a woman to dance. If I had the chance, I'd ask a woman to dance.
Unfamiliar with his band Generation X, they scored a terrific hit in England with the song Dancing With Myself. It comes from an EP called Don't Stop that got considerable attention from some of us American DJs. But like millions of others, the very first hit that Idol had was one that he bought, not recorded.
The very first record I ever bought was She Loves You by the Beatles. Six shillings and threepence halfpenny. I was 7 years old, and I'd saved the money up myself. So it was my first ever heavy purchase, musical purchase. Then I had a Ringo Starr snare drum.
Oh, I had to get a Ringo snare.
Of course.
So you were a drummer first?
Yeah, actually, that's what I liked originally, yeah. I wanted to play an instrument, but I was most excited about the drums. I've always thought it's the most brilliant instrument, really. I like the Velvet Underground and Jim Morrison and Iggy Pop and the New York Dolls and... Always, that's a lot of what punk rock in England was based on, was that whole New York scene.
It sure was.
So yeah, I loved all that sort of stuff. In fact, Steve Stevens always says it's really funny. I was listening to tons of American music, and there he was in America listening to loads of English music. It's crazy.
All the dreams and schemes, people are as they seem.
no fun. Don't forget you're young on a hot summer night. Sometimes someone you're not won't wait to see what you got. But you know that you're hot in the city, hot in the city tonight. Tonight, alright. Hot in the city, hot in the city tonight. Tonight, right now. Okay. Oh, walking to my feet drop. Train when I hit the ball. Yeah, lay right down now. I'm right until your head breaks. I'm a wall until my brain pops. I'm a moon with a beat now. I'm a train when I hit the ball. I'm a rhythm in the heat now. New York.
See, the great thing was when I moved back to the States, it was really early 60s. And so in England, rock and roll was still very big. So I actually got to hear all people like Gene Vincent and Buddy Holly and Elvis and everybody on the radio when I was a kid. Not only in America, but when I went back to England. So my basic sort of musical education was basic rock and roll.
You gotta toss and turn.
That is Billy Idol with his cover of the Tommy James and the Shondells hit Money Money, also comes from the Don't Stop EP, and later became a big hit with a live version in America.
This song, White Wedding, from the follow-up to the Don't Stop EP, that's the one that I think, would you agree, really put your name on the map?
Yeah, that was the one that sort of really gave me a relationship with the American audience, one they could sort of recognize me by the most. I actually wrote it, funny enough, seriously about my sister getting married, because she was actually doing that thing of being pregnant already but getting married in a white wedding dress. And it was almost funny, you know, like, you know, people use conventions to bring about security, even something silly like a white wedding dress. And, you know, and so the whole song was really just an aim at fighting against conventions, which just hold you in, don't let you out if you're using them for the wrong reasons. If you're not really in love with someone, you're marrying them, it's definitely a mistake. No service or ceremony or religion's really going to help you in the end. So it's kind of about that. It's sort of saying, I'm not so anti-weddings as just if there's a falsehood in it, it's not so nice then. And that's the idea of the psychotic, almost incestuous brother coming back, claiming the right to his sister.
Day for a white wedding. day to start again. Nothing fair in this world. There is nothing safe in this world. And there's nothing sure in this world. And there's nothing pure in this world. Look for something left in this world. Day to start again. It's a nice day to start again. It's a nice day to start again.
The searing social commentary and the sneering vocal of White Wedding made the video emerge as one of the inaugural hits of earliest MTV in America. Next, Billy Idol explains how pivotal his return to the U.S. was and how the punk look tended to limit his employment in the workplace. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and for a whole lot more, you can visit inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Billy Idol. Now, make no mistake about it. Billy's earliest bands in England, particularly Generation X, didn't take some pious, punk, nihilistic pose. Generation X was clearly commercial, so when Billy found himself without a band and without prospects in New York City, Billy had no philosophical problem with seeking out and signing with Kiss's manager, Bill Aucoin. Here's Billy Idol with me in the studio.
I didn't come to the States till the 1980s, but yeah, when I came here, I moved to New York. Yeah, because at the time, that was one of the few places I'd been where I knew there were other rock and roll musicians of the same sort of caliber as myself. And at the time, I had no money, so New York's the perfect place to move to in terms of getting around and stuff. Yeah, the greatest thing was that people actually had a sort of certain amount of awareness of me, and even better, they had sort of a respect for me. And that was kind of amazing, because in England, things had gone to sort of deteriorated to such a degree that, you know, it wasn't as if I was the most respectable person on earth. I can't say I am now, but...
But at least you got a bank account, right?
Yeah, at least people were excited about my music, and it gave me a whole fresh start.
Founding title song to Billy Idol's 1984 multi-million seller Rebel Yell, featuring the co-writing and pyrotechnic guitar of Steve Stevens. When I've talked with many of rock and roll's greatest British performers, they all tell a common tale of being forced to actively seek out American blues and soul records in the 60s, because the government-controlled radio station back then, the BBC, was the only one in the whole country. Interestingly, 10 years later, Billy Idol found their patchwork quilt of musical block programming beneficial.
England's got a much different radio format. They tend to play lots more different things on the same station, if you know what I mean. It's not all split up. There's not black and white radio. There's not pop radio, if you know what I mean. There isn't really different sort of zones of people making music.
Different formats.
So you'll hear a soul song, then a heavy rock and roll song, then a blues song, then a one after another. So it's a great education. And of course that means you're constantly exposed to things from America that sometimes Americans aren't hearing them in that order. So they, if you're not tuned to that station, you don't know about it. I was able to come here and have a chance to play rock and roll music to rock and roll people, and they liked it. So that's fantastic.
Your eyes without a face. don't despise. Now all I can do, love what was once so like you, but it's gone from your eyes. I better realize. Eyes without a face. Eyes without a face. Got no human grace. Eyes without a face. Such a human waste. Eyes without a face.
Have you ever had a straight day job?
Not really, no. I left sort of college and I only did like a delivery job for about a year. So the only thing I'm actually capable of doing in a job is delivering things. So yeah, I can do it. I can get the invoice signed, you name it. So I used to deliver to construction sites with all my punk rock hair and all my jeans ripped up and everything. And all the building workers used to be absolutely in hysterics.
So yeah,
there'd be someone like me delivering big drills and things.
And now their kids are going to be paying to see you tonight.
Yeah, now they look like me.
Coming up next, more idle talk about sex, videos, rock and roll, and Reagan-era politics. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you can find a whole lot more at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Billy Idol. Billy happened to be on tour at the time of this interview in the studio, and I noticed that Billy seemed to really enjoy hearing his songs on the radio as we discussed them.
It's just great to hear the recorded versions when you know you're going to be playing this stuff live tonight. I mean, I'm glad that I can enjoy my music. It's not being egotistical. It's dance rock music, so you got to move, you know. If you're always looking to make sure it's that what you're doing on stage is definitely matching what you've done on the record, and if not better, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, you're always sort of concerned with those sort of things. Now, I guess the wildest thing about it is it's always ridiculous seeing that bit of plastic going around. If your voice coming out of it, it's kind of funny. Something nice about records, they're sort of silly, but I like them. Yeah. So it was great the day that I found myself on one. I couldn't believe it.
Catch My Fall, another hit from Billy Idol's 1983 Rebel Yell album.
Do you remember the first time you ever got a song, a record, and you looked on the paper label and your name was in there?
Yeah, the very first Generation X thing we bootlegged ourselves, so it was great because we made the label up and everything, and pretty fantastic. That's a great moment.
With equally effective contributions by Billy Idol, co-writer guitarist Steve Stevens, and producer Keith Forsey, the song Flesh for Fantasy from the Rebel Yell album, the flesh part was accurate, but it was no fantasy when Billy was named in the Heidi Fleiss call girl investigation. He never denied it, in fact, found no reason to. So when the spotlight of the Iran-Contra investigation brought people like Oliver North and John Poindexter out of the shadows of covert operations beneath the Reagan White House, Billy had some observations on that, too.
Well, I just thought it looked, I don't know, I know they've indicted them, but it also looked like it was a huge publicity thing for...
For who?
Well, for sort of very conservative American values, if you know what I mean. Mm. I mean, they were basically, Ollie North was basically pushing platitudes at us, things that sound good, but they don't necessarily mean anything. I mean, I could stand here and say I want freedom, peace, and justice, and I was only doing my job, but at the same time, if you're not actually doing peace and justice and all that stuff, it's just a platitude. It's something that sounds good, and I don't know, when I watch those sort of things, I can't help but feel that, you know, why is there such a huge amount of time given over to one idea? There wasn't as if there was an opposing viewpoint really being seriously put across, you know? I can see what they're trying to do and everything, but it's just a peculiar sort of thing that, you know, once something's on TV and someone's got the platform, they're twisting it any way they can. And, of course, you know, people don't really pin them down on what their words actually mean. They just get them to repeat what they've said.
If you had it to do all over again, you'd change anything?
Well, I might have changed these shoes, but... no, not really. I'm lucky. I think there's nothing much to regret. I mean...
That's great that you can say that.
I think the biggest thing is you sort of miss a lot of friends you've had along the way. It kind of is like that because you're constantly moving. You tend to, you know miss friends and stuff or miss situations. Like Generation X was a great group to be in. I sort of always missed that punk rock time because it was such a sort of... you know, friendly, a load of people giving you their songs when you throw in theirs. Nothing had been recorded then, so it was very exciting. But of course, you just got to keep going and put the same excitement into what you're doing now. And what do you think of songs like To Be a Lover? You can see that I've got my roots in rhythm and blues as much as, rock and roll, if you want to call it.
That's a very good point. Now, for those who think that this is your song and you wrote To Be a Lover, give them a little bit of the background. Where'd this song come from?
Well, see, I like reggae, and I was listening to a George Faith album I had for 10 years. That was called To Be a Lover, because the song was on it. It was a slow reggae song. And then when we came to do it for the album, Whiplash Smile, basically, we looked for the person who wrote it and found no, it wasn't the reggae person who wrote it. It actually was a Stax song written by Booker T. Jones and William Bell, and it was very slow with the violins on it.
From Memphis.
And we almost Booker T'd it more than Booker T, so that's crazy. But I think that's, like I say, it shows you I've got roots go a long way back, right to, you know, almost when I was born.
Taste on my tongue, too many holes, the damage done is bittersweet, black on gold, talk is cheap, or so I'm told. I'm gonna ride this bike to the edge of town, roll to the bridge with my eyes shut and spit at the stars and scream in the dark. There's nothing I can do to change it now, but if I cut myself open, baby, you can read all my scars, read all my scars. Hello, goodbye. There's a million ways to die. Should've let me way back. Should've let me way back by the roadside. Hello, goodbye. I was staring. It's a bitter taste.
Hard living would later derail Billy's career in the 90s and almost prove fatal twice. A 1990 motorcycle accident almost cost Billy a leg. Then a 94 overdose almost took his life. But Billy Idol dodged those bullets. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Billy Idol. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2013, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and visit inthestudio.net.